Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. This Friday in San Francisco, Nina Haft and company will make its debut of Precarious Pod, an immersive dance performance for small, intimate audiences. And it's about animals and extinction. In the performance, the creatures living precarious lives are crows, wolves, and vaquitas. The pod symbolizes three environmental settings: air, land, and sea. Through extensive research into animal behavior and environmental impacts, Nina Haft created three interactive dances in collaboration with visual designer Ian Winters and composer Gretchen Jude. According to a UN report from earlier this year, and we actually did a show about this, 1 million plant and animal species are at risk of extinction over the next few decades. So what can we learn about our relationship to animals, and how can we think about extinction through the lens of performance art? Nina Haft is a dancer, choreographer, and artistic director of Nina Haft & Company, which is based in Oakland, California. Nina has been an artist in residence at the Margaret Jenkins Dance Lab, at the California Arts Council, the City of Oakland Public Libraries, among many other places. And Nina has presented her work throughout the Bay Area and abroad. And Nina joins us in studio. Hi, Nina. Thank you so much for coming in.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having us.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Rogelio Lopez. Rogelio is a dancer and lighting designer. He's danced professionally for many contemporary dance companies and is director of the MFA in Dance at St. Mary's College of California. Rogelio teaches at Shaw Anderson's Dance Center in Berkeley and is the artistic director of Rogelio Lopez and Dancers, making works around his upbringing as a queer immigrant. And Rogelio also joins us in studio. Hi, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much, Rose, for having us.
Well, it's great to have you. I should also say that if you are in the Bay Area, you can see Precarious Pod. It debuts on Friday. There are many performances. It's a one-hour performance, so there are performances at 7 and 9. It's also on Saturday and Sunday, and then again next Friday, Saturday and Sunday. The Sunday performances are at 4 and at 6 at the Joe Good Annex in San Francisco, 401 Alabama Street. And you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Nina, before the show, I was telling you that every Monday we focus on issues around the climate, whether it's species extinction, plastic, the vaquita, what have you. So when we heard that you were doing this piece, we were really excited because I love it. And now it's more and more when artists and dancers are bringing in issues onto the stage to raise awareness. And I understand that you have been really bringing the climate crisis into your piece for a couple of years now.
Yes. So this piece, Precarious Pod, started as a response to things I was noticing literally in my own backyard. There's a sort of micro green space because the yard in behind my home is adjacent to some others, and birds have been migrating through the backyard and above it for many years. And I noticed in about 3 years ago that the range of birds, the biodiversity, was noticeably smaller. And I found myself wondering, where did all the birds go? And the ones that seemed to increase and be making more and more of themselves at home were the crows. So it was my first experience of noticing how extinction was happening literally right under my very nose.
And the crows, it's interesting when we talk about birds, we don't really bring up crows very much.
Yeah, crows have quite a lot of myth as well as fact about them. Mm-hmm. They are birds that I think are among the most, my understanding is they're among the most intelligent of the bird species. Their brain to body size ratio is exceptionally high. And scientists who have studied them have begun to recognize that they can communicate with each other. They can communicate about things that are not happening in the present. For example, they recognize human faces and can tell you, stay away from that lady. The last time I saw her, she tried to put me in a cage.
Wow.
They also know how to use tools. They know how to problem solve. And some of them are interested in exchanging gifts. They will leave you little trinkets, shiny presents, if you feed them. I had an experience trying to leave some food for a different creature in my backyard, a squirrel that was injured. And every time I put the food out, it would disappear immediately. And I started to realize that the crows were taking it, so I would put the food out and watch, and they wouldn't take it until I turned my back. That's how skillful they were at manipulating me as a human.
Huh. I love that story because I think that humans tend to flock to the interesting-looking bird or the bird with the amazing colors. And with the crow, you kind of think, oh, yeah, the crows, they're everywhere. But there's so much to learn about them.
I think also there's so much folklore about crows because even without the science to tell us this, we as animals recognize that they're exceptionally powerful. And I looked into the numerology. There's a whole tradition of counting how many crows you see and that being an augur, some kind of fortune telling about what's going to happen to you. And I think that's an example of how folklore is a technology where humans are trying to understand by observing nature how to make better choices. Just like the farmer's almanac comes from generations and generations. Many cultures have that accumulation of knowledge that comes from really observing and being with the animals as well as the plants.
You have done so much research for this performance. You've read a number of texts on animal behavior, survival, and the environment. And I understand that you also have gone to various conferences where you connected with scientists to talk about the power of bringing issues around the climate crisis to the stage.
Yes, I had the opportunity to attend a conference for water scientists through the Association of Limnologists, and I collaborated with the scenic designer that I work with on this project and others named Lauren Elder. She and I put together a group of artists that work around issues of water, and we attended as a small group, a little pod of artists, to a very large conference that took place last year in Canada and Victoria. And we did workshops and attended other scientists' presentations to share how the creative process has a lot in common with the scientific process and where creativity and inquiry and gathering information about patterns and recognizing distortions and anomalies and patterns is a lot of what we do as artists as well.
What is a limnologist?
A limnologist is a scientist who studies fresh water like lakes and rivers and ponds, whereas an oceanographer studies the ocean.
I don't think I've ever heard of a limnologist.
I only learned recently.
Thank you for bringing that to us. Rogelio, I wonder, as a dancer and lighting designer, you do so much teaching, director of the MFA in dance at St. Mary's College of California. What are your thoughts about what is the responsibility of an artist right now, or what is it like to be an artist right now, where you have the opportunity to really bring these issues to the stage in a very different way that allows us to experience it than we would reading a report? Or I printed out a number of really sad stories that we'll talk about today, than reading an article about what we're dealing with.
I think the responsibility is to be honest with our bodies in delivering the message that the choreographer wants us to do. For Nina, she did bringing a lot of readings that she has done for the area that I am doing, which is the wolves. So it was about talking about instinctual ways of moving and exploring. So instead of just learning movement, we are improvising and finding ways in which to move, to feel very instinctual about it instead of just showing off what we can do as dancers. So I think the responsibility for us, it's been changing. Instead of using the Western movement vocabulary, we've been exploring more human body and see how can we view it in whatever subject that we are delivering. And in this instinct, it's the wolves and how do we move, not like wolf, but how would they feel if they were looking for something? Or there was conversations about mapping and different areas that wolves do, and we sort of have a discussion of how do we do that as humans and how can we do it without words, without the thought, but more instinctual. Of like saying, well, I want a glass of water, so I'm going to go get a glass of water. But instinctual is you feel something and you search for something, not really knowing that, yes, there's a sink, there's a cup, and I'm going to just pour myself some water. It's something different than that.
During this process, what did you learn about wolves?
I definitely learned quite a bit. I was sort of putting all of the information toward my cats that I have at home and investing time in looking at them. But in wolves, there is one story that Nina was telling us that most of the time a pack has an alpha and a beta, and most of the time it's a male. But there was one story of what is the wolf?
This is a particular wolf from a group that was brought to Yellowstone National Park, and this wolf was named 06, and she was the alpha for the entire pack.
Which is very, very different than the usual. It used to be a male, but the alpha was a female, and she was doing both works of the alpha and the beta. So it was something different, which I didn't know that in the first place of the hierarchy in a pack of wolves, and also the limit of how many wolves are in a pack, and also how do different alphas become alphas, and how do a lonely wolf joins a different pack. So there's been quite of information about wolves.
You, Nina, did obviously a lot of research about wolves, and you found some very interesting similarities between wolves and humans.
Yes, so part of why I was really interested in focusing on wolves was because they are what's known as an apex predator. So by reintroducing them after them being hunted to near extinction in North America, reintroducing them into the Yellowstone Park in a really short period of time started to support the resurgence and health of the entire ecosystem. So the idea that just a few individual animals and being given freedom to thrive in their natural habitat could bring benefit to all kinds of plants and animals really interested me. The other reason I was interested in wolves is that they are a land animal like we are. They also have a very, as Rogelio was sharing, they have a very clearly articulated social structure, and they function as families. So the alpha male and the alpha female are the only breeding pair in a pack. So there may be other males and females in the pack, but they don't breed. The alphas don't breed with their offspring. And when it's time for the offspring, when they grow and reach maturity, they go off to start their own packs or to join one. There's also, we started to explore how we as dancers working on a project were also a kind of specialized pack. Often a choreographer in a traditional dance setting will come into a rehearsal and tell dancers what to do, and that's not the process that that I'm interested in deploying when I make art. So we had a lot of experiments with how to make decisions collaboratively, and how leadership doesn't mean that the alpha gets the last word or the first choice, but there are different roles that a beta or a yearling or an interloper, as it might be, functions. There are different kinds of leadership. Just like if you are at work, your boss isn't the only one taking initiative or making things happen, although a lot of our labor structures are hierarchical. I learned that there was a way we could function as a pack that wasn't hierarchical, but just each of us had a more specialized set of responsibilities, so to speak. And our communication with each other started to reflect those power dynamics. We talked a lot about the difference between power and control, and how sharing power meant that the whole pack would benefit and we could each be different, but have a mutual success by recognizing those differences. And sometimes those power dynamics were very difficult to deal with in rehearsal, and I felt really honored that the dancers wanted to talk about them and share honestly about their experiences.
What came up?
Well, there was one day that I came into rehearsal and thought it would be interesting to experiment with human body language. You know, if we're pack animals, what are the ways that we communicate nonverbally about dominance and establishing dominance or submission? And I remember we were doing a kind of common structure where you do a round robin, someone starts and another person comes in, and then the next person can decide when they want to interrupt the pair and become the partner of the first or the second person. And as I was watching some of the I would say their learned behaviors of expressing dominance started to create some very uncomfortable images, which to me were either sexist or heterosexist or racist or possibly ageist. And so we started to talk about this is how I, what I bring into the room as an artist, as a performer, or as a director, and how might these unconsciously or unintentionally surface, and it's okay to reveal them if that's where they belong in the piece, but it's not all right to let them unintentionally just spread all over a performance. People don't come to see a show in order to be re-socialized to these biased ways of power sharing or power dominance. And it was a good lesson for me to speak up and say, I didn't realize that this was going to bring this up. And let's talk about how we can present an image that talks about power but doesn't make an unintentional statement that leaves the audience uncomfortable.
Rogelio, what was that experience like for you?
It was very interesting because the previous question that you were asking about what is our responsibilities as artists, every artist has its own ethnicity and gender and its own idea of who that person is, and giving us the freedom of seeing the social structure that we were creating in this role playing, to be able to talk about my own lens as a Latino gay immigrant, and how do I view dancing with other dancers that are other ethnicities or Caucasians, and in the power structure within it, how do I see this in my own lens of the power dynamic? Not as a person who I'm dancing with that I know, but how could an outside eye can view that interaction? Just like when we view animals too, we view them and we create our own story based on where we are looking, not knowing exactly what they're doing. So the same thing with different ethnicities, if we see that interaction without any words, we tend to see a power structure there. And there was one thing that Nina brought in, photos of the pack of wolves in which they look like they were fighting, like they were killing each other. That probably, she was saying that based on all the research, it looks like they were just either playing around or they were just the alpha was just calming down the beta, but the visual look like there was a huge conflict, and it seems that way too when we pair different ethnicities without being conscious of what it could be viewed as, that there are choices that we're not looking into or there are unconscious choices. And it's so nice to work with Nina that she gives us space to interact, to play, to experience, and then sit down and reflect. And then from there, try it again with the ideas that we talked about. View it again and analyze it again and see how it connects to the animals that we are talking. So there's this constant reflection about what we are doing. And this is when I was talking about breaking down the Western movement vocabulary, that is not ballet, that is not modern. It is more experiential of instinctual, and also analyzing how we move, how do we interact, and how do animals do the same.
That is Rogelio Lopez, a dancer and lighting designer. He has danced professionally for many contemporary dance companies and is director of the MFA in Dance at St. Mary's College of California. Rogelio will be dancing during the Wolves section of Precarious Pod, which debuts this Friday at 7 o'clock at the Joe Good Annex in San Francisco, 401 Alabama Street. There's also a performance at 9 o'clock, the same times Saturday, next Friday and Saturday, and then this Sunday and next Sunday, there will be performances at 4 and 6. And they are 1 hour, no intermission. Joe Good is 401 Alabama Street in San Francisco. Find more information at yourcallradio.org. And I should say, I always feel bad because we have listeners outside of the Bay Area when we talk about these performances. I did some research yesterday. There are some videos of your dances, so you can find little teases of this one. Yes. And learn a little bit more about that.
But you do travel.
Yes, we do travel. We are hoping to share this work in other communities.
Great.
So
great. And that is Nina Haft, dancer, choreographer, and artistic director of Nina Haft & Company, which is based in Oakland. And if you have any questions or comments, so many more artists are now bringing the climate crisis onto the stage. They're trying to educate people about what we're dealing with through art and then hopefully inspire them to get involved. And so if you have any questions about what you've been seeing lately, if you have questions about this dance performance and just the power of bringing these issues to the stage, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. And again, Precarious Pod is an immersive performance for small, intimate audiences about our relationship with animals and about extinction. Let's talk about the vaquita, because that's another section of the performance. And I read an interview you did, Nina, in Dancers Group, and it just really caused me to stop, because what you said was the visual is so powerful. We did a show about an amazing documentary about amazing scientists and groups trying to save the vaquita. There are very few left, and they might be gone in our lifetime. And you said, imagine swimming to try to find your friend, and you can't find your friend, and then imagine being the only one left. That's really powerful.
Well, that's actually the third section that we have in our show. And I became interested in the vaquitas when I met a scientist at this conference who explained to me that the animals are dying not necessarily because of the oxygen being depleted in the coastal wetlands. They only live in one place, in the Gulf of California. But they're dying because they're being illegally caught up in fishnets, that the black market cartels or the cartels are fishing for these other animals, these other fish. And so the vaquitas drown in the nets because they're mammals, they're not fish. And to me, this was an example of how human behavior is creating a different kind of extinction. So sometimes people talk about background extinction and catastrophic extinction and how there's a constant sort of low level of species dying and arriving, and then catastrophic events like a meteor or an ice age can cause large numbers of animals to die. But until this current mass extinction, the animals that were dying were typically dying because their habitat was disrupted, not because they were being ruptured as animals for their value. And human beings tend to measure value in terms of how much we can control something. Like if we think we can control nature, then that makes us more valuable. Or we think we measure value in terms of what we can consume and accumulate. And these two approaches are not working. It's clear that accumulating value and control is not helping the planet survive, nor will it help us. So in the vaquita section, I worked a lot with Mallory Markham, who's the soloist, to, number one, think about how she might navigate through space by sending out a sound and then waiting for it to echo back. This is how the vaquitas navigate through echolocation. And then to imagine and remember what it was like to once be in contact with your partner and then have that partner be gone. This piece actually started as a duet and then it became a solo. So we literally had Mallory remember what it was like to do partnering with the other dancer and have that other dancer no longer be in the room. And it became a very powerful way for her to tap into a sense of loss and absence while waiting for something to come back that had stopped responding to her. So that's how we approach that.
It's such a beautiful and just such a sad way to think about it. I remember the name of the documentary, and if you can get a chance to watch this, it's called Sea of Shadows, and it's an urgent call to save the endangered vaquita. And the fish that are being caught are totoaba. And Then, as you said, the vaquita get caught in the nets. Rogelio, did you know much about vaquita before you started with Nina's performance?
No, I didn't. But I also want to add to Nina's process is that her process takes a year a bit more in creating these pieces. So the information that she's talking about, working with a duet and then just taking that other person out, I feel that it is very visceral because they spend months working and then out. Same with other works that I have worked with Nina that spends a year or 2 years creating these experiences for us that we keep analyzing. So it's not just a performance that is put on. It is an experience for a large span of time.
We're going to take a quick break, and I'd love to hear about that process and what it was like for that dancer. That is Rogelio Lopez, a dancer and lighting designer who has danced professionally for many contemporary dance companies, and you can see him dance in Precarious Pod. The performance debuts this Friday in San Francisco at the Joe Good Annex, 401 Alameda Street, 7 and 9 p.m. This Friday, next Friday, this Saturday, and next Saturday, 7 and 9 p.m., and then this Sunday and next Sunday, 4 and 6 p.m. And you can find information at yourcallradio.org. Nina Haft is a dancer, choreographer, and artistic director of Nina Haft & Company, which is based in Oakland, California. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
Your call is better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, toll free. You could also send an email to yourcall@klw.org or leave a comment at the show's website, set a bookmark for yourcallradio.org, and you can also tweet us at Your Call Radio. Keeping things secret, making things public, that's the topic on 1A at 11 o'clock, one half hour from now, here on 91.7 KALW.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are talking about a new dance performance called Precarious Pod. It's for small, intimate audiences, and it looks at the relationship between animals and humans. It also explores the very serious issue of species extinction. And today we're joined by Nina Haft, a dancer, choreographer, and artistic director of Nina Haft & Company, which is based in Oakland, California. And their new piece, Precarious Pod, debuts this Friday at 7 at Joe Good Annex in San Francisco. And you can find information at yourcallradio.org. We're also joined by Rogelio Lopez. Rogelio will be dancing in the wolf section of the piece. Rogelio's a dancer and lighting designer and is director of the MFA in dance at St. Mary's College of California. And if you'd like to join us, if you'd like to just talk about really the power of art at a time when we're learning so much about the climate crisis and bringing these issues to the stage to educate people and then after the show to have a conversation and to get people involved, we'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions for Nina or Rogelio about just what their art and the importance of bringing these issues into their art, we'd love to hear from you. And just more generally, if there's any sort of art pieces you'd like to give a shout out to or companies that are focusing on these issues, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet at yourcallradio. Before the break, we were talking about the section of the piece that focuses on the vaquita. What was it like for the dancer to dance, have a partner, and then to lose that partner?
We talked about that. It also coincidentally happened at a time when, as Rogelio mentioned, I tend to work slowly and over a long period of time. And Mallory moved to New York City. But before she moved, her fiancé moved away about a year before. So she had her own personal experience of being partnered and having the person who she remembered through her senses, through that sense of touch and dailiness, to be far away. And so she tapped into that as well as the idea of calling out to a missing partner in your movement. Specifically in rehearsal, we went back to material that had only been possible to do with two bodies, and Mallory spent some time with me giving her feedback, improvising in response to that imagined or remembered touch. And I think a lot of us have that experience when someone is gone or someone is far away. We can almost bring them back by remembering what it felt like to be touched and to touch that person. And that literally was how we explored movement that not only was interesting movement-wise, but that also really resonated with how she was looking or searching through the space. And that was really her idea. So it's another example of how collaboration often brings ideas and methods into the process that I cannot come up with all on my own.
Wow. What will the experience be like for audience members? Rogelio?
I feel like there is different experiences that you will have throughout the performance, especially for the vaquita. It comes right after the wolf pack, and the wolf pack has created this family alpha beta interloper kind of a relationship with four bodies, and the impact of just leaving the space empty for one singular dancer with one singular light creates this loneliness, inspiring but still satin image about one creature leaving behind. And also as dancers, we feel it differently since we don't have that much interaction with the other two dancers that are doing the crow or with the vaquita who's doing the solo. But to coming in together to create this piece, it makes us be aware of the different species and how we interact differently. How do they move versus how do we move? And I feel that the audience will get that feeling of distinction, but also a sense of connection of the way we move as human beings and how do we connect with animals, and hopefully to be more aware of the environment and how our actions are impacting different animals, not just these three, but other animals that are in danger of leaving this earth and not seeing them again. Just being conscious, hopefully that there is this sympathetic feeling and inspire audiences to view other species and respect their environment.
Yeah, I want to just expand a little bit about how we've approached designing the experience. So audience members will be in a very small group and be sitting up close, very close to where all of the movement is happening. And I'm working with a really talented group of designers. Ian Winters and David Call are bringing projections and sound design into the space. Gretchen Jude has composed all of the sound for the piece. And Lauren Elder has composed a really brilliant way of making the space both fractured and holistic through scenic design. And the audience will come into a very quiet space where the invitation is to slow down and to be in our own bodies, feel the presence of each other, to connect with ourselves, and to notice what's going on in the space. And that's something that to me is a piece of how to respond to climate change. There can be a feeling of we're running out of time. We better hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, and try to move something that's enormous and almost impossible. And what I've discovered in this practice is that by slowing down and putting energy into being with each other and being with other creatures is a practice of radical empathy. And that kind of radical empathy is something that certainly living in cities doesn't really support. But I think in this age of technology where everything can not only happen quickly, but can jump across the entire planet and disrupt, frankly, things across the planet instantaneously, there is a tremendous power in slowing down and noticing what's actually happening and being with it instead of trying to control it. And we've designed the piece so that it doesn't have the traditional sort of introduction, exposition, climax, and then conclusion. It's a chance to slow down and be near other creatures and see that as humans, we're the only animals that move expressively. Every other creature on this planet moves for function and to satisfy its urges and instincts. We also can choose to move in other ways. And if as humans we can help other humans see that they have other choices, that can bring them closer, bring us into living with other creatures, I think we'll notice different things and make different choices.
You just raised so many things for me. Last week, we had on Chrissy Kiefer and Stella Edelman and Frederica Kiefer to talk about the 20th anniversary of Dance Mission in San Francisco. And one of the things we talked about is slowing down and also just being more in tune with our bodies, because so many of us wake up with the phone. We're on it all day. We go to bed with the phone. And they provide a number of dance classes every day. So we were talking about the importance of just kind of moving the body and dancing. And can you talk about that? Just kind of going back to the basics, that something as simple as slowing down and being in tune with your body. But in this day and age, that's so important.
It's not only important, but it's actually key to our enjoyment as well as our survival. The mediation of our experience through technology makes amazing things possible and actually allows us to connect with other people and make community in ways that didn't used to be available to us. At the same time, if you are really attending to technology, it's hard to feel and notice, let alone respond to all of the internal signals. There's just as rich an internal world as there is out there in the World Wide Web. And we're learning more and more about that internal universe. And dancers, I think what we have to bring to this issue of climate change is that we have a lifestyle of listening to those internal messages. And it's not just what do we see and hear, but also we can notice our kinesthetic patterning. We can notice our equilibrium. We can notice our temperature and our sense of pressure and touch and heat. And we have a finely tuned process of responding to signals. Our immunological system, our digestive system. It turns out there's a whole universe just in our digestive system. People are now learning about that microbiome. Mm-hmm. Every single cell in the human body has parts of the universe embedded in it. We're not an individual. We're a community. My body is a community. And so if we can learn to turn inward and learn our way around that universe, we have a lot more information that connects us to the universe on the other side of our skin. Mm-hmm. And as dancers, we learn how to respond to each other. And part of what we did in this process was also learn how to respond to those other invisible forces that animals as well as plants are constantly responding to, like light patterns, weather patterns, cycles of the moon. The same phases of the moon that cause the tides to rise and fall are acting on us all the time. Our bodies are maybe 70% water, but we don't have to pay attention to it. We can choose not to pay attention to it, and that ability to opt out is the biggest problem we have. So learning to opt in to engaging with our bodies opens up so much opportunity to connect not only with ourselves, but with each other and with other parts of the planet.
Mm. Rogelio, what would you add?
I think that as dancers, we embody emotion and we embody touch. And right now, I think we desensitize ourselves by being on the phone and getting instant gratification of being happy, looking at a joke or a video and judging other people just by purely seeing them on a TV or on the computer. That the way you sympathize with another person, in that way, it's easier to judge and cut people down. That when you start actually having an interaction with another body, that there's a different type of empathy, that it's more embodied. I feel like I can reach out and touch that person and feel the temperatures, feel their face and how they're reacting to what I am saying. Or even in dance, if I pour my weight into someone, how are they receiving my weight? Is the same thing as having a conversation, a vocal conversation, of seeing the actual experience of just by looking at your face and your facial expressions of how you are accepting or receiving my message and how I am accepting through the phone. We most of the time lose all of that, so we lose that connection.
You just reminded me, like, eye contact is so important. I mean, I see people having dinner together and they're both on their phone, and you just wonder what
Yeah,
we need to come back to this. I think it's getting more attention now.
Yeah, and also it brings us back to that. If we are not even looking at each other in the eye, how are we attending to other creatures in our world? Mm-hmm. That if we're not even having this connection with each other, that it's easier to just go outside and not pay attention to the environment, throw something on the street, throw something on the water that will affect another creature. It has to start with us.
And it's about building relationships. I mean, I can get food out of a machine, but if you cook me food and share it with me, then I've been nourished. And there's a qualitative difference. And maybe the calories are the same and the nutrients are the same, but how I take them in is going to be quite different. And it's not only on an emotional level. We're learning that there are physiological differences in what happens when we are in relationship, in real time, and in real space. I don't think it's better than technology, but if technology starts to displace being present, mm-hmm. then we have a problem. And live dance, live theater, live music asks us to be present in a room with someone who is present with and in their own bodies. And that has an alchemy that is unique.
Well, you can experience live dance if you are free and in the Bay Area this weekend or next weekend. Precarious Pod kicks off this Friday. There's a performance at 7 and at 9 p.m. Also next Friday, this Saturday, next Saturday, and then this Sunday and next Saturday, the performances are at 4 and 6. They'll be at the Joe Good Annex, 401 Alabama Street in San Francisco. Find more information at yourcallradio.org. Precarious Pod is an immersive dance performance from Nina Haft and Company. It is for small, intimate audiences about the relationship between animals and humans and species extinction. And we're joined today by Nina Haft, artistic director of Nina Haft and Company, and Rogelio Lopez is a dancer, and he will be in the Wolf section of Precarious Pod, and he's danced professionally for many companies. Let's go to a caller. Let's hear from Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I guess as a former dancer in what seems now like a previous lifetime.
Greg, can you bring the phone closer to your mouth?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, there you go.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah, I was just saying that as a former dancer in a previous, or what seems like a previous lifetime at this point, because I'm 76 years old, I just remember the joy that I used to get out of movement and dance. And I'm glad to hear what your guests are talking about with regard to just dance and the joy that you can get from dance and the meaning and trying to spread the word in terms of the environment. But here's a concern that I've got. On any weekend in this country, millions of people are going to sports events, literally millions. I mean, to professional sports events, college sports events, high school. So I guess the question for me is, this is so important, how is it possible to reach a wider audience? You know, than just, I mean, 1,000 people might come to a dance performance, and that's great. But, you know, you've got 70,000 people going to a football game on a Saturday. How can you get dance out to a broader audience? And I think PBS used to do a program. They had a program that ran for several years on dance in America, and that just disappeared.
Hmm.
I just think that there's something like that needs to be done to get this out to much more people.
Well, Greg, before we hang up, I just want to say I love learning that you're a former dancer. I did not know that. It makes me like you even more. Thank you for calling in, Greg.
Okay.
Take care. So what about that, Nina, bringing this to wide audiences?
Well, I want to say two things. One is that there is a power in choosing to be in a small size audience. Mm. We could have had far larger numbers of people at each show. So the separate issue is, how do we reach people and engage people around the issue? It kind of reminds me, I read about the gentleman who helped to co-found the White Helmets and how he figured out that these very large global attempts to exert security and control in war-torn countries wasn't really making any kind of positive change. And he started to mobilize small communities of local people to respond during times of war and disruption. And I think in a way dance can do that very appropriately in small groups so that we can feel the connection with each other. That said, I think one of the reasons why dance is not as widespread as athletics is that the way athletics are often trained and financially supported is as a very competitive and, frankly, gladiatorial exercise. And so they become something that can channel very large groups of people's aggressive, competitive urges in a form of mediated and detached setting. So it kind of puts a megaphone on those instincts. There's nothing wrong with those instincts, but when they get out of proportion, they cause a lot of trouble. I think if more people got to dance, we would see something different. I've been to places, I've been to countries where everybody dances just as much as they play athletics. And frankly, if every athlete needed to take a dance class in order to be on a sports team, we might see that happening. Mm.
And I was thinking if only one sports athlete's salary was given to dance companies,
of course,
it would be in a different place. What about that, though? When you said that the artistic process takes about a year, I was thinking, how do the dancers make ends meet in the Bay Area? We've done so many shows over the years about just how artists do it, and it's really difficult right now.
It is. Dancers are among the most resourceful, creative, organized people I've ever been in the presence of. I'm proud to call myself one of them. And in today's Bay Area housing market alone, the average dancer I know has at least three jobs, often more than that. And it requires incredible time management and also self-awareness to understand what kinds of projects demand what kinds of things and how do they balance and make a healthy life. And frankly, a lot of dancers find they can't sustain it as a lifelong career because of the stresses. But Rogelio, I think, also could speak to that question.
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult to take care of our bodies, to make ends meet, time management. But I feel that the rewards are plenty, that we go to great extent to be able to work with artists that we believe in their message. I've been lucky enough to be dancing for a while now, that I enjoy picking and choosing the message of the artist that is bringing, and I wouldn't mind if I don't get paid in order to support that message to the community, that it is important to talk about environmental issues, race issue, power and privilege. All of those issues are very, very important to me, and if I don't have a platform to say it, even if I'm not getting paid for it, I will love to be in that table to be able to speak on behalf of whoever is representing my voice or whoever I am representing a voice, that we have to do the work, even if it's not about the money. It's more about the investment, about making the world a little bit better. And when you were talking, Nina, about the competitiveness, that dance and arts, it's a risk of exploring your own self in the way you think. And if we do all make our own part of stopping and analyzing who we are and how do we act and how do we, our presence impact another being, it's worth taking the time. And I feel like nowadays, a lot of people with, you know, reality shows and with all of these ideas, that life becomes a different focus about competitiveness and drama. And most of the time, I feel like the arts is actually the reflection on us, and that's the risk.
And I was wondering, since you are director of the MFA in dance at St. Mary's College of California, how do you talk about these issues with young people, young students?
We do have different classes for the students, and one of them, who Shana Vela teaches, it's called Dance and Social Justice, in which she talks about many different subjects in power and privilege, and the different type of discriminations, and how do we view it in movement, in context, in text, in television, in radio, and anything that we see it, and in which lens are we looking at it. If we choose to ignore in which lens we are looking at, we tend to step on somebody else's ideas and ideals. And I know I was talking to Nina about, and you were talking that in your department also, you teach a class called, what was the name?
Sex, Race, and Body Politics in Performance.
And so we do bring that into the students. because it's important to talk about those issues. But also, they are the future. So they should be able to prepare to talk and analyze about these issues after us.
The other thing I would add, I also have the great fortune to have a faculty position at Cal State University, East Bay and Hayward. And one of the things that I have come to really invest in is when I'm teaching to make sure I'm not the only source of knowledge and expertise in the classroom. For one thing, only one person's training and background can never be sufficient for an entire community of dancers. And today's young dancers or returning dancers need as wide and versatile a skill set as possible. And also because I'm an older white female, it's not my desire to have my students imitate me, but rather to support and design a learning experience so that there are several sources of knowledge, skill, leadership, and training available in the room. And frankly, that needs to happen in a small group. I have people ask me all the time, can't you teach 60 people at a time? Can't you teach 100 people at a time? Can't you teach choreography online? And I think there are some ways to make those resources available, but actually to make those kinds of non-hierarchical structures in the classroom, we need to all be able to work with each other and then work with each other again and again and again. So it needs to be in a community, and that means smaller.
Mm. We have 1 minute left, and I just want to end on Precarious Pod. It's going to be an intimate experience for the audience, and in addition to educating, maybe people don't know about the vaquito or crows. I'm guessing a lot of people don't know much about crows. What about the educational element and encouraging people to get involved?
Yes. So thank you for asking. There are 6 dates where we are presenting 2 shows. And in between the early and the late show, I've invited a representative from a different local community organization. Some are involved in wildlife preservation and rehabilitation, and some are involved in climate change action. So you can stay after the first show or come early before the second show and learn about ways to do things in community and to take action steps with groups like Extinction Rebellion and the Sunrise Movement and the Hayward Shoreline Interpretive Center.
That's fantastic. Thank you both so much for providing us with this amazing performance. I can't wait to see it, and thank you for coming in.
Thank you again, Rose.
Thank you.
Rose. And if you are free this weekend or next, you can see Precarious Pod in San Francisco at the Joe Good Annex Friday, Saturday. This Friday, next Saturday, 7 and 9 p.m., and then this Sunday and next Saturday, 4 and 6 p.m. Find information at yourcallradio.org. Precarious Pod is from Nina Haft and Company, where Nina Haft is artistic director and Rogelio Lopez is a dancer. He will be in the section about wolves. Find more information at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show and Kevin Vance, our studio engineer. You can find more information about the show and sign up for our podcast, yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.